Hi, everyone. Welcome back to I've Been Thinking. This is Brietta, your host. I am back with yet another amazing person. You know, I feel as though one of the silver linings that I've been able to find throughout this period of time, which has been, you know, unbelievably difficult, I think, just globally, is that I have been connected to and able to have conversations with so many different people who have, you know, so many different perspectives. And I've said this before on the podcast, and if you're a regular listener, you know that I don't really know any other way to process anything other than having a conversation about it. So I've been seeking out people that I think will help us think and feel things a little bit more deeply. And today we have on the podcast Nikita Chaudhry. She's an artist and an activist and an educator. She's currently based in LA, but she's a graduate of NYU Tisch School of the Arts. She majored in drama, and she has a minor in performance studies and an honor certificate in theater studies, but she's an actor and an activist. She's done some great work in social justice, and I'll let her tell a little bit more about that. But she's, you know, she's a creative. She's worked both on the stage and on the screen. Most recently, she can be seen on ABC's Station 19. And I'm so happy that she's willing to be on the podcast today. Hi, Nikita. How are you?
Hi, Brietta. I am doing all right. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Before we jump into our conversation, I know I gave people sort of like the highlights of who you are, but definitely fill in the blanks. Tell people a little bit about yourself.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I realize I just said Brietta, so I meant to say Brietta. So
That's okay.
Let me just correct myself and set the example that correcting ourselves is the norm. So I grew up in Baltimore, Maryland. That's kind of where my story started. Both my parents are immigrants. My dad grew up in India. My mom grew up in the UK, but they're both of Indian Punjabi heritage. And growing up, I was like one of very few, if not mostly just my family, brown girls or South Asian girls in my school. And it was very homogeneous, primarily white, primarily affluent students. So that was like what I was coming from, but I was very privileged and lucky that my high school had a very, I'll put this in quotes, but like immersive and rounded diversity program. So they really provided resources for us to have these conversations on ourselves. And while, you know, there's always criticism and things that you could probably say, I was very grateful because it did provide me with tools to start to learn how to facilitate and honestly, just start to get educated in a history that otherwise wasn't part of my like educational curriculum or any of our educational curriculums, right? And then also in high school, I started to get really serious about theater. I was already dancing and singing from a young age. And then come like my junior year of high school, I did this program right before I went to my senior year, I believe. And it pretty much changed my life and confirmed that I wanted to be an actor professionally. And that's what brought me to NYU, Tisch School of the Arts, where I majored in drama. And then after graduating, and while I was at Tisch as well, there was definitely a lot of activism I was involved in on campus. And then post-grad, I stayed in New York for about 3 years. And I was doing mostly theater, as is the case in New York. And then about 2 years ago, I moved out to LA. And while I was in New York, I, in addition to doing mostly plays, on stage and working in some festivals as a dancer as well, I got involved with working with the Women's March National Team, which is Linda Sarsour, Tamika Mallory, Carmen Perez, and Bob Bland. At the time, that's who was, the primary leadership. And that was post the Women's March in DC, the first one. It was for the Women's Convention in Detroit, which was primarily educational programming and partnering with local, Detroit nonprofit organizations and political organizations. And that's kind of like where my focus was providing that partnership and being in touch with the local host committee to put on the event. And that was a great experience too, because it kind of got me involved more politically on a national level and got me to see things. It was the largest event that I had ever been a part of because there were thousands and thousands of people that attended. And that kind of spurred me into a little bit more of like an activist as a part-time side career in addition to my creative career.
Yeah. So it sounds like innately your sort of life trajectory has led you into being comfortable with the intersection between being an artist and being an activist. And I think that it's an interesting place to find yourself when you have, you know, at least a fair point of reference. I know you mentioned sort of what your high school brought as far as, you know, maybe some ancillary curriculum or opportunities to really delve deeper into the idea of diversity and how that bleeds into education. So it sounds to me like you were already sort of like in a space that was not an unfamiliar concept to you about sort of how being an activist might be part of, you know, your story. And I'm curious from your perspective as someone who has done, you know, this work, what are some of the ways that you're looking at this current time that we're in? I know for, maybe I don't know, but my assumption is that for a fair amount of people, this is really their first brush with activism in a way. And so they're sort of finding their legs about all of that. And I'm curious from sort of maybe your point of view, how are you looking at where we are currently?
Yeah, it's an interesting place to be. Because I think we'll all always have things to learn, right? Like we're never all going to know everything about every human experience on this earth. But that being said, like it is something that I've considered to be part of my journey for a long time. So it's been interesting to see so many people kind of just like wake up, and I can understand how frustrating and infuriating that must be, especially for the Black community right now. But right now I feel like what's happening was kind of in a weird way meant to happen right now because of the fact that we've been in a pandemic. There was already transformational things happening, especially with the election of both 2016 and now. Mm-hmm. We're both kind of lighting the fire for somewhat of a revolution that has been on edge for so long. And now that everybody is absorbing so much content because they're home and you have access to more internet than we've ever had before, like with social media, with Google, with the news, with everything, you're just constantly, with entertainment, you're just constantly absorbing. And so I feel like it's an opportunity for people to really not only learn, but also share what they're learning.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that momentum will continue, but I do also see like from an outsider, a big sense of like the first couple weeks of the uprisings, there was just a lot of like vomiting of content on social media. and some of it, like admittedly, I'm sure for a lot of people was performative because it was like, well, if you don't say anything, like I have to say something. But, right. But I'm hoping that like, once people understand that this isn't a race that you're going to burn out from, that it's more of some, as a marathon, it's a daily commitment. It's something you have to do every single day of your life. It will actually be transformational. And the fact that it's happening now in 2020, I think is really in a way, you know, both tragic because of all of the event, like the quote unquote current events that have happened, though they've been happening for hundreds of years. In a way, it does seem like it is meant to be right now, you know?
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think this has been part of sort of my own processing of this information that seems to be rampant everywhere, which is that I do think, and I remember saying this to someone earlier, I do think that it was something about the time intersection between COVID-19 and the events that were happening, you know, and we can say George Floyd, his murder might have been sort of the spark, but it had been, you know, we saw what was happening with Ahmaud, we saw what was happening with the Central Park instance. Like there were lots of things that were happening. And I just think, and I remember saying to someone that I think because of COVID, everyone had been still long enough to actually absorb the information. Because I think to your point, And maybe this is something that's skewed just because as a person of color, you are much more cognizant of it, but it wasn't, you know, these stories were not new. You know what I mean? Like these things have been happening for, as you said, hundreds of years. But I do think that there was something about the fact that people had been still enough, you know, and sort of moving at a more humane pace that they could actually absorb how atrocious this was. And I think that maybe there was something about that in the timing, that made people to your, I think you said it well, wake up to what was happening. But I do agree with you. I think this is the biggest fear for a lot of people, is that this will become a trend that people will lose interest in. And I think that that's part of why I made this commitment to use this space to have these sorts of conversations, because in my perspective, I think the next step is, how do we leverage all of this information that's coming out so that it can be a part of like real education, that people can walk away with tangible steps so that they can actually understand, you know, how do I make this a part of my real life? From sort of the work that you've done in the past, what would you say are maybe some ways that people can move towards solutions? I'm always interested in hearing how people are maybe doing that for themselves, and maybe that translates into something that's helpful for other people.
Yeah. Well, I do think, I'll start by saying it's different for everybody. And there are so many amazing activists and organizers that have been in this space for like decades. So Right. The first thing to do is probably make sure that you're following those people, because they will have so much more experience on me and on anybody that is just entering the space, or anybody in between. I've been saying this to some people who are newer to the space and have been feeling super overwhelmed, because I think especially as artists, we just feel a lot. I just feel like I'm always crying. I do identify as an activist and organizer, but physically I just like love organizing my brain. Mm-hmm. And to make things more manageable, I was saying this to some friends that I've been talking with the past week about seeking how to make this more of part of their daily commitment. And I like to advise people to look at it in all the different parts of their life, right? So if you're looking at yourself as an individual personally, that's actions you can take are reading How to Be an Anti-Racist by Dr. Kendi. It's reading White Fragility, all the books that everybody's sharing, right? It's you actually putting your money into Black businesses, into small businesses, into supporting people that you may not, maybe you weren't already doing. So doing that on your own and having those conversations with your family, like that's all something that's happening right in your personal life. Right. And then you move on to publicly, like posting on social media is important. And making that stance is important, doing that all protesting. If that's something that you're able, physically able to do, voting, educating yourself about politics, like all of that is part of your civic duty, your civil right. It's something that you're doing publicly. That's outside of yourself, right? You may be taking part in getting involved in a local organization that already exists and has been doing the work for a while. And then finally, you've got professionally, which I feel like I mentioned that last, because I feel like it's the part that everybody forgets. I think people are like so excited about maybe reading this book and starting a book club, or going to a protest because they want to take the selfie or whatever, the reasons. Yeah. I think that performative activism is better than nothing in the most cases.
Like, exactly.
Okay. At least you're posting, right? At least you're saying something, because somebody might see that and it'll mean something to them. I was actually sidebar talking to my dad about that recently, because he was talking about people on his in his neighborhood putting out signs that say Black Lives Matter. And he's like, I'm going to order a sign, but I feel like it's weird because like, obviously I think that, but like, what, should I get a sign? And I was like, you know, it means something to people that drive by, you know, like if people know it's a safe space. So I think like, you know, you seeing it in itself means something to you.
Right,
so
exactly.
Imagine what it could mean to other people. But professionally, I feel like it's important to look at that in two ways. Like, how can you use your skills, what you do, to help the movement?
Right.
And there's so many ways to do that for every field, you know? Using my dad as an example too, right? Like, he's a physician. And I was like, you know, those are skills that if you ended up at a protest, you could be a medic. If you were working for a local organization, you could provide, maybe your hospital could provide resources, right?
Right.
There's ways you can do that no matter, you could do that with any field in the world. And no matter what you're doing, there's a way you can use your skill for the movement. And then on that as well is actually diving in and looking into the industry you're doing and seeing how white supremacy is already infiltrated into that system and how do you rebuild it in that way. And I think for like acting, for the entertainment industry, it's very easy to do both ways, right? We want to use the industry to tell these stories, to uplift stories that weren't told, to reimagine a world that doesn't exist yet, but that we want to exist, because usually culture changes before society, before politics. But then also we have to look at the way that the industry is run, because in the way it's run right now, we already know that it's mostly white cis men at the top. So it's like, how can we already try to undo what's already indoctrinated into the system and rebuild it in a way that works for everybody?
Yeah. And I think that what you touched on is such a great very practical way of looking at it, because I think that piece that I find most interesting is the professional piece. I'm very interested because I know that for a lot of people, and I think that this is very specific for anyone that belongs to a population that might be considered marginalized, that might be considered anything other than sort of like the American norm. They are very used to having to separate personal ideology from professional, you know, advancement. And I think that it's a separation that feels very comfortable to people of color, to people who check like an other box. It's like, I may care about all of these issues, but I don't know that I can care about those in my professional life and still make the advancements, et cetera. But I do see a demand for authenticity in our professional business spaces that is pushing people to align their personal ideologies and their professional work in a way that I haven't seen before, which is actually really exciting. And to your point, we're seeing that across many different fields. Like, it truly, I can't think of an industry where they're not having this conversation. But I do think that there's something unique about the creative space, because not only are we looking at it as a business, right, as workers in this industry, but we're also a part of the ones, and I think you articulated this beautifully, we're a part of the ones telling the stories that shift the culture. And so how do you reconcile trying to fix a system while trying to be in it at the same time, I think, is the battle that a lot of creative people are trying to wrestle with. Have you found that to be a particularly difficult sort of balancing act for you, trying to align those things?
Yes, absolutely. And I think one of the first things that came to mind when you just said that was, because of the hierarchy that is the industry, I think it's really hard to do when it feels like you quote unquote don't have the leverage or quote unquote don't have the power. And especially as an actor that's not like a name or an A-list, you know, you don't have, I mean, literally managers use it as leverage. They use those words, right? Like,
right.
I think it's hard because how do you speak up sometimes when you don't feel safe because you could lose your job and you know that you're irreplaceable, you know, you are replaceable, excuse me. Or how do you like refuse a job when you need the money? Like, right. There's so many reasons. And then that works across the creative industries. Right. But I do think there is a disconnect that I am trying to, as you are, constantly figure out how to realign. Yeah. And the disconnect is between like the majority of the entertainment industry, and this is a generalization, would be liberal, right? Like, the majority of them would probably call themselves, or are at least trying to make their way towards, anti-racist.
Right.
That being said, that's in theory, but in practice,
yeah,
when it comes to them being on set or in the rehearsal room or on stage, it's not there. Like, you'll see, I was just in a reading this week that had a lot of like gender and sexual diversity, but was primarily white. It only had two characters of color, me being one of them. And they were both like kind of tropes. And it was like, in a time like this, especially, I'm like, how are you not even the, I'm sure you're posting Black Lives Matter. I'm sure you're doing all the things that you're supposed to do, quote unquote, on social media, but,
right.
But how are you going to actually put that into your life every day? Because that's actually what's going to change things.
Yeah, I think that's such a great example, because I do think that this is the conversation that's happening. And I think that there are layers to that conversation, depending upon where you sort of sit on this racial spectrum, for lack of a better way of putting it. I think that there is a pressure that that does not exist for, you know, the white cis men who, for lack of a better word, make this industry move, that that there's not enough pressure being placed on their livelihoods, on their power and prestige in order for them to really have to implement all of those things. And I think it's a really interesting time, because I see for the first time, at least in our lifetime, that actors are really trying to find ways to hold the system accountable for all of the quote liberal ideals that they seem to espouse, right? And so I think it's an interesting reckoning that the industry is finding itself in. And I think one of the reasons why I love having conversations like this, because I'm curious how we as a community stay united through something like this. Because when you mentioned that example of the reading that you're currently in, and there was two people of color, I had a conversation with an actress on the podcast a few episodes ago, and she and I were talking about the fact she's a Black actress. And she and I were talking about the fact that when you look at productions and there are typically so few roles for people of color, that it creates this scarcity mentality, which makes it really hard to stay united because there's so little that's available. And so you're trying to accomplish and create community at the same time. And so I'm curious, do you find it easy to stay sort of united to the creative community in the midst of all of this? Are there ways that you're navigating that?
Yeah. I mean, I think the first thing is to find community, which I think is hard. But if you're, and I talked to actors that from 10 years ago, where it didn't maybe exist in the way that it does now, right? Like everyone was kind of going to the audition room, not really talking to each other and then leaving. And I feel like there are so many leaders, organizers, and organizations that provides the opportunity for you to find the same people in those audition rooms. Yeah. Like there are South Asian American organizations I'm a part of as an artist. And I know there's also just, you know, Black, Indigenous, people of color organizations that we can all be a part of. And when you start seeing each other at auditions, it's more of a camaraderie and less of that mm-hmm. scarcity model. Right. But that we have to remember that, like, it's not, we do our part for that scarcity to undo that and make it more about abundance. But scarcity is so much part of what white supremacy has put it into these systems, like scarcity. And I think about that a lot because I think that is why, and one of the main reasons that the US historically pit immigrants and Asian Americans against the Black American community. Yeah. Because it was like, you know, if you want to be, I mean, the model minority myth was about, you know, because the Immigration Act of 1965, we all know, well, if you don't know the history and you're listening, go ahead and look it up. But I was like, I don't need to give that lesson right now. But but knowing that, it's like there's a sense of, I can't let go of what I have because I don't know if there'll be more for me. And I think that there's like, I recently wrote a poem about this as like a letter to our parents, Asian American parents, about the Black Lives Matter movement. Cause it's like, I know you think that you, and if you're going to stand for something, it means that your life is at jeopardy as an immigrant. Yes. But in fact, the only way we can all be free is if we do stand for Black liberation, right? Like it's the only way you're going to be able to let go of like whatever whiteness you're trying to wear right now. Mm-hmm. But I feel like it, just to answer your point, like I do think community is like the main way to start to undo that, to remember that. And it's kind of up to us to trust in our own work of rebuilding this industry, that if we let go of something that we know is not for us, then it's for somebody that it's better meant for. Like,
totally, you know? Totally. I think that's such a lovely, lovely way of looking at it because I do, you know, it is so apparent that the desire to stand for something means having means reconciling how that trickles down and impacts your own sense of security and your own sense of safety. And it's something that I'm often trying to be actively gracious about, because I think that there was sort of this initial movement. And I mean, again, we're talking about social media, so it's 90% performative, but there was sort of this sense of like, if you're not posting, it means you're not with us. And it's like, but that's just not true. I mean, there are a lot of factors that people are having to sift through in order to say, I know that I want to do something. I don't know what A feels authentic to me, which I think is the most important, you know, question to ask yourself. How can I support something in an authentic way that's sustainable for me? But then also, I wouldn't trust an intention that wasn't filtered through, like, how does this impact, you know, my world, my family? It's interesting. I mean, this sounds like a weird aside, but I've been on TikTok just like most of the world. And I saw this TikTok of this young white teenager who was in tears because she wanted to post a Black Lives Matter sign in her yard and her parents wouldn't let her because they were afraid of what the neighbors would say and what the neighbors would do. And she couldn't reconcile that. And I was like, I understand that there is a constant discussion that people are having about what support means to me and how that impacts me. But I'm particularly interested from your perspective, do you feel like this is changing the way artists are looking at themselves? Because I do get the sense that there does seem to be a little bit of a turn in the tide where actors are losing a little bit of that trepidation about, like, if I say something that could negatively impact my career. I see people being a little bit more empowered and emboldened by that. But I'm also curious about, maybe is this shifting or changing the way we're looking at ourselves as artists? Maybe we're adopting a little bit more autonomy and power in the system. What are you finding?
Yeah, that's really interesting. I feel like I very much hear a lot of the what feels authentic to you, because I do see, you can tell on social media, you know, we read it, especially if you know the person, you're like, oh, you're just kind of happy posting right now. You're just posting literally everything you see, like, versus people that are really being intentional about what, and I've talked about this even on my social media. I'm like, take a second before you post something, because first of all, a lot of times there's been miscommunication over social media on mass movements. We've already seen it happen, like where some movement is misspread and then everybody's like, wait a second, I don't believe in that. Or like, I didn't mean to do that. Mm-hmm. So take a second to educate yourself about what you're posting before you do it. And then know, who is my audience? Which in itself is a very artistic way of thinking about the world, right? Because we're constantly putting on a show for somebody, something. And the first thing you think about when you're creating a project is, who is this for, right?
Yeah, like, interesting.
Who am I doing this for, and what am I doing this for? And why now? And for what purpose? Like, those are the things that, if I feel like if an artist can't answer those questions, it's kind of like, what's the point in putting it on? Like, why do you have to, especially for theater, because it's so, it exists just now in the present. It's not something that will live on forever, you know? But in terms of artists viewing themselves differently, it's interesting because my first response to you was going to be, I think a lot of people are hopefully being more vocal just because of the change of culture, the change of the times. I know the generation below me, like Gen Z, is like really killing it with them just being like, middle fingers up.
Yeah,
like,
right,
I'm just going to say whatever I want.
Yeah, they're just burn it all down.
But literally they're like so happy. And I'm really excited about what that future is going to look like too.
Totally.
But I think a big part of it is, and I've been talking to a lot of my creative friends that are like minded. It's just kind of like, so many of those little things don't matter. It's like, once you think about what's at stake and you educate yourself about what's at stake, about a number of lives that have been lost because of police brutality and mass incarceration and all of the systematic issues that have happened. Like, once you educate yourself about that, it's kind of like, well, I guess like that strand in my headshot really doesn't matter. Like, it's like, you know, it's like the little things where I think you were afraid to say something, it's too much at stake for you not to. So at this point, it's kind of like, I can't live truth to myself. There's no point in me being in this career, which I fought to be in for most of us, right?
Right.
Or I would say for a lot of us, some people were very privileged and lucky, but most of us, I mean, I'll speak for myself. Like, I had to fight my parents to be an actor, to be an artist, to be a creative. And sometimes it's still a fight every day to just like exist and be here and for us to make money. And if you're going to put that much at stake, you can't do it inauthentically. Like, you're not just going to put all your whole life on the line and then be like, okay, and now I'm just going to sacrifice all my friends so that I can book this one job and make this amount of money, you know?
Yeah, totally. And I think, you know, I think that's such a great point, because I do think that maybe it's less about artists seeing themselves differently, but that because there's a global, maybe sort of consciousness shift that's happening, that we're seeing it sort of maybe manifested in ways where it looks like in different industries, people are beginning, it's something that I've been noticing, which is that I feel like I'm seeing people see themselves differently. You know, I'm looking at, for, you know, as an example, influencers, you know, these are people who live their lives online and they have a career that, you know, 10 years ago didn't exist. And for most people of a certain age, it seems like a very vapid sort of like career. And yet these are people who hold major audiences, and I can see that they're stepping into an understanding of the power of that audience. And all of a sudden, it seems as though they're taking themselves more seriously in a way that I think is really exciting to see. But I think something that you mentioned that I really I've never thought of it this way. And to the audience, you know that I say this all the time. This is the reason why I love having these conversations, because I love when someone says something, I'm like, oh, I've never thought of it that way. And I think you're right. You know, as an artist, we are constantly thinking about who's our audience, right? Like, you know, one of the things I love most about the creative process is I love asking myself, why is this moment performative? Right? Like if my character's in the kitchen baking a cake, why is that performative for people to see? You know, what is the audience supposed to take away from this? And I do think that that is something that would be a good filter to use when you're trying to figure out what to do and how to be moved to act in this space. It's like, for what reason? You know, what is the why behind what I'm doing, and who am I trying to do this for? I think is a really great way to sort of think about it. And I've just never thought of it that way. I love that.
Yeah. 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 It's interesting too, because I feel like I was just having this thought. Artists are so much, you know, Nina Simone has that famous quote, which I won't try to say verbatim right now, but basically about how artists reflect the times, right? Like it's our duty.
Yeah.
And I think now more than ever, especially because of the ways in which a lot of journalism has been corrupted,
right,
it is our duty to tell the truth, because people are going to look back on this time and the art is going to reflect how we're feeling and what we're going through, especially, you know, also being in the pandemic on the flip side of things. Like even that is going to be, I mean, we don't even know what the future effects of that will be, but,
right.
Yeah, it's interesting for me to think about too, like the role of artists as we continue through the movement.
Yeah. I think, you know, when you said that, it brings back to my mind, one of the things that I remember sort of, it's an idea that I latched onto in university. You know, at NYU, you have this sort of like embarrassment of riches of these classes that you can take. And I took a lot of classes about, you know, African diaspora and how that impacted theater. I took a lot of classes about Eastern European history and how that impacted theater. And I remember walking away from those classes with this innate understanding that theater and art has always been political. It's always intertwined into the craft itself, because art in its truest form should be a reflection of the times, as you said, Nina Simone's quote. And I think one of the things that I have been excited about, sort of like on the other side of this moment in time, is like what those stories are going to be. I mean, I think that it's an interesting space to be in, because I think we're seeing storytelling happening in real time, which is why it's sort of like messy and all over the place. But I think there's some beauty in that. But it is going to be interesting to see sort of what those stories are going to be on the other side of this. And I'm wondering for you, is there anything that you're particularly hopeful about when you think about like the other side of this moment in time? Is there something that you're like, I'm looking forward to seeing what that is going to be?
I'm really excited about, I know that a lot of these like social media trends aren't always used the way that I think whoever originally started them intended them.
Right.
But I know that in people's efforts to like hashtag share the mic and hashtag amplify melanated voices, there's also just an overall movement of lifting up so much Black business, Black artists. And I'm really excited, Black creatives. I'm really excited about that, because I do think that will not only provide space, but it'll allow for people that previously have been in power and mostly white folk to take a step back and listen and provide space for people that always should have had a seat at the table.
Yeah.
So I'm excited I think I'm really hopeful, because I know that the stories and the narratives and the structure will change if and when these larger companies, and especially I'm thinking in Hollywood specifically, but I know on Broadway as well, like in the theater industry, when they actually start to listen and they bring in people for anti-racist trainings. And then on top of that, also actually uplift all of the Black artists and creatives that were previously put down, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I do think that that's one of the things when I think about what would I love to see changed or done differently. When I really think about that, from sort of like a tangible space, I think one of the things that I would love to see is I would love to see an amplification of authentic stories that are fully comprehensive of Black, Indigenous, people of color narratives, that we begin to expand the definition of what those things look like. I think that, you know, the filter through which we see these stories is really so small and narrow, and we haven't been able to give space to what the full comprehensive story and narrative can be. And I think that's one of the things that I'm looking towards the future. And I'm like, I would love to see us do that better. And, yeah. You know, and from, you know, so that's sort of like from a tactical standpoint, I think from like my utopian, most positive place, I would love to see us come to a space where everyone feels equitable, you know, and I think equitable to me means that they have the freedom and the ability to manifest whatever feels authentic to them. Like, to me, that would be what's most equitable. And I don't think you can attach numbers to that. I don't think that means, you know, I'm seeing a lot of businesses saying we commit to 25% more people of color and we're committed. And it's like, okay, I mean, I'll take the numbers because I know, I mean, that's good. But yeah. I think it's more about like, you know, a shift in our thinking, which is like there's space for Black and brown people, Black and brown artists or in business to be whatever they have the authentic desire to be with no parameters. And I would love to see us reach that place. Is there something that you're thinking to yourself when I look at the system as it is now, whether it's, you know, our global economy, whether it's our political systems, you know, sociologically or just creatively, is there something that you're thinking like, I would love to see us do this better or differently?
Yeah, our healthcare system is trash.
100%.
And I think it was even proven even more so with the global pandemic. Yeah. And it's embarrassing, like, especially with the resources that the US has relative to other countries in the world. It's just like, it's not just, it's not fair. And that on top of like, I obviously am very, you know, the other thing I'm really hopeful for is the fact that in Minneapolis, like right after on the precipice of these uprisings, they've made efforts to already defund and start to disband the police is amazing.
Right.
Like that is, we have to also remember like, yes, the uprisings have put an insane amount of pressure on these cities and on these states, but also that is a result of years and years of organizing locally. Like that's been happening, like just like with Black Lives Matter Los Angeles out here, which I have been following for quite some time. Like they've been working on this people's budget for a long time, and they presented it recently to the city council, and the number of people that watched it and that have been sharing it is so exciting. And I think it's putting a light under that, but yeah. I think that's also inspiring that there are now so many people uplifting this work that has been going on for a while. Yeah, I think the other thing that you were saying that I just want to touch on too is I think a lot of artists feel that way. Like we're kind of tired of seeing these characters that are defined by their identities. Like that is the thing that is special about them. Like that, and they might want a tropey thing that we assume all insert this identity once.
Exactly,
right?
Yeah.
And it's like, it also affects, I've been thinking about this recently, it affects our, as a kid, not seeing any Indian American people on TV or on stage, like it affects who I am and what I think. Like so much of, I feel like I was raised much more by Black culture and than anything else. Like I'm like, that's why I think that as an identity thing, that's something I've had to understand and, you know, dig into and expand and rebuild, because it's like, well, culture really does affect us and affect our children so much. So how are we going to make this so that there's a world where they're kind of, it's normalized more so for it to be this full world where everybody has different experiences and it doesn't have to be just because of these systematic issues that have been pressed on them for their entire lives, you know?
Absolutely. And I think what you touched on, I do think is the sort of the first work that, you know, going back to sort of the start of this conversation about like, when you think about the different ways in which you can be making changes, whether it's, you know, personally, sort of in your inner circle and then maybe bleeding out into professionally. I do think that that first work, when you're talking about looking at yourself, is about unpacking some of the ideas of how you see yourself based upon what has been modeled to you through culture and, you know, all of the mediums through which culture is streamed to us. I do think it's, you know, I had a conversation with another actress. And one of the things that she said that I thought was really just, she said it so beautifully, which was like, you know, as a brown person, I could assume that I don't have racist or prejudiced thoughts, but I have to do the work to unpack the things that I also am being sort of, that I have been, you know, taught to believe, and really addressing them, unpacking them, so that I can be the best ally, the best support to equity across the board. And I do think that when you look at that type of work, if you were to just do that and didn't go to a single protest, didn't post a single thing on social media, you would have done enough work to like change the trajectory right. of the movement.
I mean, that is the real work, right? Yeah. Like that, and it's interesting because I wrote something recently in a poem that was like talking about burning it down, but burn it down also means burning down parts of ourselves because we are parts of the systems and we've contributed to it. And not at all, Sonya Renee Taylor actually recently posted something about this on Instagram because she does these like What's Up Y'all videos, which I highly recommend to anyone listening. But she was talking about how we're all, especially non-Black people of color, but we're all indoctrinated with whiteness. Like,
absolutely.
We were raised, especially if you're raised in the States, like this is our system and we have partaken in it. And therefore there are parts of us ourselves that we have to disband and figure out and dive into and analyze. And Dr. Kendi also says, I've been like consuming a lot, if you can't tell, but Dr. Kendi also says, and I've consumed a lot over time. And now that there's like platforms to talk about it, I am wired to talk about it.
So I'm
like,
love that.
I know this. Like, but Dr. Kendi also says like the first step to being anti-racist is actually to admit that you have racist tendencies, right? Like 100%. You have to find that. And even with like moving through all of this, you know, and to the point of, I think a little bit ago, you were talking about this girl on TikTok who was like about the sign and her parents and being afraid of that. My therapist said to me this week as a reminder, and I think a lot of people are saying this now, but transformation requires loss. Like it requires a grief, a mourning, it requires change. And sometimes personally in your personal circles, that means loss of friendships. And while that's hard, the right people will come back. And even the people that aren't willing to have that open mind and necessarily change and start to learn more, that's on them. And they will be behind the times, and they will, just like the people that were in the civil rights movement, like they will have to change with society because we're going to be the majority and we're going to be the ones that are changing things.
Yeah. And I think that if, and I think I was saying this to you before we actually went, before we started recording, I think the thing that I have been most surprised by, but loving the most, is just the tearing down the artifice around, you know, these conversations that really, if we can come to a place of honesty about even what we're thinking, as complicated as it is, as convoluted as it may come out. You know, I was having this conversation with a friend of mine on Instagram, and she's not a person of color. And she was saying, she's like, I'm just so afraid to say the wrong thing. And I said to her, I was like, but everyone is going to say the wrong thing. Like none of us has this 100% correct. And there's no way for us to heal or to grow or to learn unless we're able to give ourselves the freedom to stumble and just like say it how we feel, even if how we feel it is like complicated and like not well put together. I think that's the space that we need to be in, and which is why I've been loving having these conversations. I think it's the best first step, in my opinion, to moving towards something that could be good on the other side.
Yeah. And I think on that too, like, I think that's probably a lot of people that, you know, are listening, I'm sure feel is like, I'm afraid that I will say the wrong thing. I'm afraid that I will offend. But there's two things that happen to that. It's like the only way that we can hold each other accountable is if you try, and then you have to trust that your community will, and if you're surrounded by the right people, will call you in to help you find your way through that. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, I think there's two sides of that. Like as people that are constantly like being like, talking to people and trying to change people's minds, all this stuff. It's like, there is a sense of, we want to, as much labor as it does take sometimes, and you have to know when to do it and when not to do it. But as much labor as it does take, like, we want to call people in. We want as many allies and accomplices in this movement as possible. So rather than shut people down because they made a little mistake, which I think happens a lot sometimes with like cancel culture that's happening, it's like, let's call people in, let's bring them in and try to move through this. And I've also heard recently that, like, that was an interesting point. I think this was on your Renee Taylor as well. That was like, if you feel like when someone calls you out, it's an attack on you personally, then that's something you need to investigate as well, because that's white fragility, right? Like, that's not, it's not you. The system is so much bigger than you. Like, I actually recently went, I was part of a Zoom call for my, for alumni of my high school. And the current head of school is different than who was leading when I was there, obviously. It's been a couple of years. And I had to say, I felt like the need to say at some point, which it's not our job to like appease her, but I had to felt the need to say, like, you need to remember as we're calling out and talking about these things that have happened in the past, that you're part of this institution that has a violent history. But it's not just on you. Like, it's also, like I said, like the government, it's our healthcare system, it's the way the economy functions, it's the fact that Black businesses have always been put down, and, and the way that the system works is so that the poor stay poor. It's so that the rich stay rich. Like, that's not just you as an individual.
Which is why, why I love that thought, because it's the reason why I've been so diligent to say to people that this movement is about systemic oppression, right? Like, I'm less interested in changing the mind of a single racist than I am about looking at a system that has been built to keep us separated and keep us from having access to the things that make communities and people's lives better. And to your point, while you may have benefited from a system, or may you, whether you have been unknowingly ignorant or complicit in that system, is really less important than just having an aha moment about, like, oh, when someone says this, it's not always about me, right? Like, that's our, you know, that's something that we have to remind ourselves every single day, me included. When I hear something like, okay, Brietta, that maybe was not exactly about you, but if you're feeling something, then to your point, you need to investigate that. And I was telling a friend of mine the other day, I was like, the questions that I keep asking myself over and over every day are, what did you feel and why did it make you feel that way? Right? Like, why did I get offended? Why did that make me angry? Why did that break my heart? Because somewhere in the middle of that is the stuff, right, that I need to be working on, separate from, you know, trying to create a more equitable society, right? Like, it's just my human being stuff.
Yeah. That's a very beautiful practice that you have. Like, good for you for being able to implement that as part of your life.
Yeah, I really want to thank you so, so much for having this conversation with me. I, you know, I'm often humbled, and I really don't say this lightly. I'm humbled when people are able to share of themselves what they're thinking and what they're feeling, because I really am such a cheerleader for the human race. Like, I really have never been sort of agnostic about the human community and the global community. And so anytime that someone wants to share of themselves, what they're thinking, what they're feeling, I consider that a privilege. And I've loved having this conversation with you. I'm so thankful that you spent some time with us.
Thanks for having me. It's always great to be a part of conversations like this, because I also feel like this is what reminds us that it's not just us alone in this little bubble, right? It's not just about me and the things I can change. It's about community care and community, you know, conversations.
Absolutely. Well, Nikita, where can people find you? Or do you have like a website, Instagram, anything that you, that people can sort of find you?
Yeah. My website and my Instagram are both my full name. So my website is just NikitaChaudhry.com, and my Instagram is at Nikita.Chaudhry. And I'm also on Twitter sometimes. It's just at @Nikita_Chaudhry. So it's pretty much all the same pictures.
Fantastic. And we will make sure to have all of that information linked in the description for this episode. Nikita, thank you so much for being a part of today's episode. And everyone who's listening, you know, I say this all the time. I started this podcast because I wanted to have a space where we could endeavor to think and feel things more deeply. And I hope that this conversation has done that. But if not, I hope that it has just been a beautiful, positive moment in the middle of your day. So I thank you all so much for listening. I can't wait to talk to you all again, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye.